Okay, now, you know, I had a question, and this is probably another one of the, I always show how ignorant I am at these meetings, but I guess that's part of my job. There's the...
That big salary.
Yeah. The last part of that 006, the .02A, where it talks about there may be some situations where information may be released to individuals who normally wouldn't have access to the confidential records and all of that. Mm-hmm. And people are supposed to refer to a supervisor or whatever. What, there must be some reason, you know, that's in there. Now, is this talking about staff people who wouldn't ordinarily have access to something, or anybody, or what?
That may not be clear enough.
I don't yeah. understand, but then I'm kind of dense about these things.
Let me read, it's 006.02, and then the paragraph you're talking about is 2A, so let's just read the whole thing. 2 is release of information. If a commission employee appears before a legislative committee, the courts, the parole board, pardons board, or any other administrative or judicial body, the employee shall not purport to speak on behalf of the commission unless so authorized by the agency director or designee. 6.02A, there may be some situation when information may be released to individuals who normally do not have access to the commission's confidential records and information. Refer to a supervisor, program manuals, a deputy director, or business office representative for further information. I think really what we should say is, when there are such situations, the employee must obtain a release of information from the individual. The situations
I can think of
would be if we're going to do if we get a call from a journalist and they want to come and interview a client, you know, or something, that we would be providing some information, we need to go first to the client and request and get written authority to do that. So it seems to me like it would be better to add that in there.
Yeah, I think so, because otherwise it leaves a person to wonder who is getting
There another, there's another place, I have to think of where it is, where we, okay, in the very first section of the part on public records and confidentiality.
Right.
The last sentence is, application forms for vocational rehabilitation and independent living services of NCBVI state that all information provided by the applicant will be kept confidential, except as specifically released for purposes of information exchange, for the purpose of service provision, or for public information. And I just noticed some commas that aren't there that need to be. So it does say that in the very first paragraph there, but I think we do need it again. And just referring to, I'm gonna delete that sentence, refer to a supervisor. And add a sentence saying that written release of information must be obtained before written, or in such cases, how about that? Written release of information must be obtained in such situations. Now it doesn't, in this section it's talking about appearing before a legislative committee, the courts, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We don't reference, but I'm sure this is covered in personnel rules. If we get a subpoena for something, we do provided.
Yeah.
So, on occasion, we do get subpoenas and we provide the information, so.
They don't want anybody in jail.
Right.
That goes from voluntary to involuntary, and so I think what we're talking about in here is voluntary.
Other sections you want me to reread or that you want to discuss?
It read fairly well to me. I mean, you know, there's...
It's straightforward, really.
Yeah, I want to commend people for the improvement on it. I mean, you know, I know that the other one was a, you know, the beginning or whatever, but it's always good to see the, you know, the changes, the real effort that went into revision, because it's definitely there.
Thank you. I might mention too, it still lacks some of the, within the actual rule, we'll have a numerical table of contents and alphabetical table of contents, both of which say they list the subject or title and then the statutory authority for each subject,
yes,
and then the code section.
Yeah.
That has not been done, and with your approval, we'll have Val work on that when she starts in her job the week after next.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was going to mention, because I knew that it wouldn't get past the
right.
Attorney General's people without that.
Yes, yes, and so that and actually, Jan also has worked with me recently on the formatting and getting all those numbers in place and getting that formatting part correct. So I want to really recognize her work on that. Others worked on text, and I recognize and appreciate everybody's work on making the text be what it needs to be. But Jan has helped with getting it to the point it is today.
Well, thank you very much, Jan.
Yes.
Definitely appreciate it. And everybody else.
Yeah. Give her a plaque.
This that I'm going to basically ask that the board approve this draft as the hearing draft. Which then, with the minor changes we've talked about and the other pages that need to be added, will be what go to the public hearing. And so, and then of course, even if any of you have problems with it or comments on it, between hopefully today, if you approve it, and the public hearing, then as with everybody in the public, you'd have opportunity to bring up things that maybe you thought of as you read through a...
When is the public hearing?
Well, that'll be what you all determine in a little bit.
Okay.
Well, I would move to approve the report.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the report as the hearing draft. Is there a discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so it has been approved for moving along to the next step.
And let's see. Okay, yeah, if I get, as Bill Wood reads again, he's going to look at it further. And so, you know, again, any technical changes that he would have would also just be what we'll add to the, you know, to this official document, and they'll be incorporated as a part of clearing the public hearing process.
Okay.
Great.
Okay, well, we're running a bit ahead of schedule, which is wonderful.
So our next step, we probably need to set the public...
Yeah, that's another item on the agenda, actually.
Mm.
So at this point, we are, unless anybody has on the board, or Pearl, if you have anything else about the rule chapter,
The rest that I want to talk about, I guess, goes into the public hearing part, so I'll wait on that till after the public comment.
Okay. Okay, is there anybody in the public, that's all of you guys out there, who wants to comment on this process or on any of the things that you heard read?
Mrs. Hubert, can I ask a question on the rules that were just read? Did I hear correctly, was there one point in the appeal process that the employee had 2 days to appeal to the next higher level?
That's for the internal complaint process, and I don't think it's the, let's see.
I thought it was in section 10 or something.
Supervisor, is it?
Yeah.
It just sounded, I heard 2 days, and then I thought I heard that that next level had like about 10 or 15 days to respond. It just seemed a little disproportionate.
Yeah, this part kind of came from Health and Human Services as well. Let me answer your question, and then I would like to comment on it. The employee, let me get the starting point. If the employees can take any concern to their supervisor within 10 work days, and then the supervisor gets 5 to reply.
I thought it was a bit further down the
seat. Yeah, it is. I'm just giving you the whole, there's 10, then 5, and then if the employee doesn't like that, they get 2, and then actually then I think that serves just to bump it to the next level more quickly.
Okay.
Then the deputy director gets 10 days, which is the same as what the employee
had to
start.
So it was intended as 2?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It does seem, you know, a little bit odd, but if you look at the whole perspective, and remember at the end it says they can always, as long as there's mutual agreement, change the time frame.
Thank you.
Yes. I do want to say, I mean, we decided to include this just to help have an official system if we need it. Frankly, not most situations where, I mean, our staff communicate with each other on such a frequent and, you know, involved basis that I would say for the most part, any areas of disagreement that don't get into the whole grievable legislative process of the contract, we deal with all the time daily. You know, if somebody has a question about how something is being done or has a complaint about how something is being done, they work with their colleagues and, you know, their office team and their supervisor and get it resolved. So for the most part, this type of a really prescribed procedure, we've never had to use. But I guess I feel like it doesn't hurt to have it, to just help guarantee employees that if there's something that needs to be worked on, you know, they can have this process. Now, I don't know what folks think about that, but it is something that was in the Health and Human Services policies, you know, that we kind of pulled over that seemed like it might apply. Of course, they're huge and we're small, so maybe we don't need that.
Well, at least it's in there and they can't come back and say, well, I didn't know there's any procedure because it's spelled out, so I think it's good to have it.
I do too.
You know, well, good, I appreciate that. It doesn't prevent people from just talking to each other, you know, we don't want to do that either. And it says we really want things to be resolved at the lowest level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can I go to the chairperson?
Yes.
I don't know if we should put, I didn't hear you say working, I don't know if that's important or implied or...
What?
It says work days, yes.
Did I say what it
Yes.
At some point, but yeah.
All the way through it says that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a comment. I also noticed when you first say that that management have so much more time than employees once the process is going. Isn't that a little bit, it kind of implies some things that the employee have a lot less time to respond. And I know somebody might say that that's true. To make the process faster, but then split the time equally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now Okay, I would like to remind everybody, you know, and I think I didn't at the beginning of the meeting, but if you want to seek the floor, if you could state your name so that we know who is seeking the floor, that would be... Excuse me?
My name is Pablo Suarez.
Okay. Okay, well, and I usually say that at the beginning, and I forgot this time, so you gave me a chance to get refreshed in my memory what I should have done. So, thank you, so...
And I have another comment. When you get to the part, it's pretty much standard language, which says regardless of religion and nationality and so on, the part of equity and diversity and affirmative action and so on. Most documents I see, when they get to the person's gender, they will say gender rather than sex, and also will include a person's sexual orientation, as well as the sort of things that you mentioned. It's pretty much standard in a lot of documents.
Okay, so we did put, we do have sexual orientation once. I don't,
no, it's never in there.
It wasn't it there at the beginning?
No, and I've never heard a board member say he wanted to include it. And it's not in the law. And I would be in favor of including it, but
we do have... we do have sex rather than gender.
Yes,
that
and
is
I thank
true.
You for that.
Yeah. Yes.
That gender is much more appropriate, and I apologize that we missed that one.
Madam President, I think that is an incorrect comment. Gender is a grammatical term. Sex is a biological term, and that's what you're referring to there. But the usual on the standards of speech nowadays seem to prefer the notion of gender, but technically speaking, that's a grammatical category, not a personal category. This is the Constitution.
Thank you.
Okay.
You have an English major in the group.
And as a matter of discussion point, I'd be in favor of adding sexual orientation.
I don't have a problem with that being in there either.
Okay. Well, in each time that the different characteristics are listed, we'll add that. I do want to go back to the business of the time frames, because two people now have noticed that in Section 10. And I have no problem at all with adding, changing the time frame, and maybe even making each one 10 days or whatever you want us. But certainly that point where the employee has two work days, that could be back to five. You know, the first time this employee has is it 15? I have to go back.
10, I thought it was.
Was the first one 10 or 15 days?
10.
Within, after they know, okay, if they're not satisfied with the verbal response when they bring a situation to their supervisor, they have 10 work days to kind of bring it in writing. Then the supervisor has 5 work days. Then the employee has 2. And actually, even the 5 work days, you know, if you're, that can be pretty difficult if you're on the road or things. We could make each step a 10-day period.
Well, it seems to me
that... Okay, so how long would it take overall if it had 10 days at every juncture? How many junctures are there?
20, 30, 40 to get it up to the deputy director. I mean, we could go to 5, give the employee 10, supervisor 5, then the employee 5 to respond to the supervisors.
Well, am I wrong that it says that you contact your supervisor verbally, and then you have however many days it is, 5 days, to bring it in writing. And then if you still don't like it, you already have it in writing. So to me, 2 days doesn't sound unreasonable, because it wouldn't be that what you would submit to the next person. I mean, it's already done. Mm-hmm. And two days seems like enough time for whatever the complaint is to go through your mind and think, do I really want to do this, or do I really not want to do this?
Yeah, I think you run the risk of, excuse me, you run the risk of bogging it down too much.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think, too. I think 2 days is fine, because everything, you know, writing a verbal, or, you know, what you said to the super, writing it down on paper, I can see where that would take time,
right.
Several days, but once you have everything in place, 2 days sounds reasonable to me.
Well, I think if you have 2 days, then if the two said for if they're out of town or something, by the time they get back, the time's expired.
That's
in a situation like that. So,
would that be
5 days or 10 days? I guess there has to be a limit.
Madam Chairman.
Yes, Dorothy.
You, they're given 10 days to respond, but that doesn't mean they can't respond the very first day and then it'll go into the next step. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
You aren't stuck into 10 days.
I was just trying to figure out what the maximum time this thing would be taking if everything took
10 days.
But you can speed it up.
And Madam Chairman, talking about being out of town or something, it does say at the end that it can be flexible, and I would think that the excuse of being out of town would be a point where it certainly could be flexible. Yes.
Right.
Definitely.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
This is Evelyn Haynes.
Yes.
I just have one point to make. That is, if you're a counselor, you have clients to deal with, and so 2 days can be a very short amount of time to respond to anything and to file a complaint. Because you have other people that come up priorities.
Yeah, and actually all the people in, I'm sorry, is it okay if I just
jump
in?
Yes,
All the parties involved in this, you know, are very busy. All our people are very busy. And so we do want it to be ample time so that you know, people can deal with things.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, too, that this written process only happens after the employee has been verbally discussing the situation with the supervisor, and they've already been working on it. But at the point where the supervisor gives the way we normally work is if the supervisor gives a response that the employees don't care for, the employees go back and think about it, and then the next day they'll come and talk some more. You know, I mean, we talk to each other, but this allows that if there's a point where the employee says, okay, I want to be more formal with this and go through the process. So at the point that decision is made, I would say in most cases there already has been quite a bit of time of discussion and you know, working on what is the best resolution to this. I guess enough people have expressed, I certainly don't want something we put in rule to have the appearance that we value the time of supervisors or deputy directors more than we value any other employee.
Sure.
So I would suggest we just switch that one where it's 2 to 5, because the supervisor only had 5 days to respond, then let the next step be 5. The deputy director, I think 10 is fair because they won't have been as directly involved. They're gonna need to learn more about the whole situation to make a determination.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be my recommendation.
Makes sense to me.
That's
yeah, and any time when somebody needs to respond in writing, rather than just turn over something that's already written, that does take more time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that makes sense to me too.
Okay.
So we're turning it over to the
just changing the 2 to 5.
Issue may be presented in writing to the executive director within. Now, if we have 5 days for that, is that still going to look?
I don't think so, because the supervisor only had 5 to respond to. The first step, the employee has
10,
then the supervisor has 5, then the employee has 5. Those are
equal.
Mm-hmm. And then the deputy director has 10, which is the same as what the employee had at the first level.
Mm-hmm.
And then the executive director has 15, but I mean the director, besides being as busy as everybody else, if not more so, then we'll also need to research the situation and learn more about all the steps so far and, you know, what's going on with this situation.
Mm-hmm.
So are there 2 times when 2 is being changed to 5?
No, there was only one place.
Only one place that it was there, and
right.
It's being changed to 5.
Right. It's 010.04 is where the change will be.
Yeah.
I really appreciate the comments and, you know, because
I do too.
When you're working on it,
it's hard to catch everything. Okay, but this is, you know, the 01.
Barbara's still commenting?
Barbara's.
Yes.
Just one technical point. If you use the expression "these deputy director," I thought they had two of them there, bro. But I don't know if it makes any difference. But
yeah, we should say a deputy director. Mm-hmm. Good point. Thank you.
Or the appropriate deputy director.
I think the appropriate deputy director.
Okay.
Can I ask a question that doesn't directly pertain to this, but what you might call a technical legal matter?
Sure.
At the beginning of the meeting, you talked about the two conference calls, and I just wondering what steps the commission takes to comply with the requirements of public meeting law when you have telephone conference calls.
We're very careful about that. We can.
Good idea to have.
We can only do that, I think, a quarter of the time, a quarter of the number of meetings that we have in a year can be that type of meeting. I believe that's, I don't have that specific language. I always look at it before we do those things.
Pearl has it.
Okay.
But is there notice given? Has been just published?
It depends. If it's an emergency meeting, then we don't necessarily do that. What we do is make the information available immediately after the meeting. It has to be within 24 hours after the meeting that things can be made available. Now, they don't necessarily, so far, we are at the point in our electronic doing of things and all of that where it hasn't necessarily been right out there within 24 hours, but it could be. I mean, if somebody came and said, we need to have this, it's just like with the agenda. The things have been generated. They may not be like up on the website within 24 hours or whatever. We're working toward that, and I think we'll get there. But they are, if someone were to call the Commission for the Blind or get a hold of us, we would be able to make available to anybody who was seeking that information, the information that they're seeking.
And they've been called for a specific purpose.
Yes, and we stay within that purpose, and we do have to, you know, that purpose has to be out there too, and it has been. I mean, not by out there, I don't mean listed on the website or that kind of thing, but available in the same way our agenda is. If someone were to call in, they could find out, yes, this is what this meeting is being called for, if it's an emergency meeting.
Did you want me to read from some of the law?
Sure.
I have the law, which is a lot of language that's hard to find without a control F. But I also have a document that covers open meeting law, which is more like real language. So that if you permit it, that's what I'm going to read. Emergency meetings. If an emergency meeting is called, the news media should be notified, even though advance public notice is not required. The reason for the emergency meeting must be reported in the minutes, and any formal action taken at the meeting must relate only to the emergency. Emergency meetings may be held by phone or other telecommunications device. Complete minutes of the emergency meeting and actions taken must be available to the public no later than the end of the next regular business day. And then this part that's about closed sessions. A closed session may be held if it is necessary to protect the public interest or prevent needless injury to an individual's reputation. Possible reasons for closed sessions include discussion about collective bargaining, real estate purchases or litigation, security issues, investigating allegations of criminal misconduct, evaluation of an individual's job performance if the person has not requested a public meeting. Closed sessions may be called by a majority vote of its members, not simply the majority of members present. The vote to go into closed session must be taken in open session. The vote of each member, the reason for the closed session, and the time it began and ended must be recorded in the minutes. When in closed session, only the reason for calling the session may be discussed. Any member may challenge the continuation of the closed session if any other topic is discussed. The challenge and how it is decided must be recorded in the minutes. A majority vote of the members could overrule a challenge. I think those are the main things that address the questions. Does that do it?
Mm-hmm. Works for me.
Okay. Yeah, and the how many times a year and that kind of thing, I don't want to have that, you know, recorded in stone because I don't remember the specifics, but I know that we have, you know, I did look at it before we have had any kind of meetings that we've had, so, you know, I know that we do comply. Of course, anybody can challenge anything we do, too, so, but the public meeting laws are available. And you know, if we're found to be doing something that we shouldn't, I sure hope somebody will let us know, because we don't want to do that kind of thing. And we've tried really hard to be within the laws that govern us as a board. Okay, are there any other comments from the public?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
So I understand this. Still comments on this past part, or can it be something?
Anything.
Okay, so I guess I do have one, if I may. You know, I work for the commission, so I'm speaking, you know, as a staff person. And we really have a beautiful thing going here in this state, and we all work pretty hard to get it there. As a team, you know, we have to just kind of always pay attention to what we do and what we say, and because it may affect, you know, another member. And what I've done is I've written up an actual statement I'd like to have read, because I've taken a little bit of time to make sure I say this right. So I want to be presented in a positive light, because it is, because we've got something good going here. So I've written it up, and if I may, I'd like to have an actual reader read it, because yeah, my parents told me when I was a kid, you know, don't be sticking your metal things down your toaster when something gets stuck. Well, I didn't, but I stuck my finger down there today, so I burned it. So I actually read it in Braille. So I did bring a print copy, and I've enlisted a reader. So I'd like to have this person read it, because again, I just wanted to say this right. So I took some time to write it out.
Excuse me a second. Could the fan be turned down? It's hard to hear up here. And maybe the reader could come further.
Do we have to have it on, even?
Yeah.
Okay. I enjoy it.
So, we have this daily read. Yes.
Maybe just turn it off at least for a few minutes. Thank you.
Okay. Submitted by Robert Leslie Newman, August 7, 2004. In a recent web search, in my routine effort to keep myself abreast of news, events, products, etc. relating to blindness, I ran across a recently posted report called the Lincoln Chapter News. It is a quarterly newsletter for the Lincoln Chapter of the ACB. The author was Mr. Bill Orester, one of our NCBBI commissioners. I was quite dismayed by the news it reported to report. I submit this written statement because I felt the report could not be allowed to stand as is. I am compelled to make an effort to add some additional remarks to round out what needed to be known, or if not, to correct some of its reported facts. Mr. Arrester's report consisted of three observations. Observation one, Mr. Arrester wrote, "The management and staff of the commission appears to accept lock, stock, and barrel the entire philosophy of the leadership of the NFB, including but not limited to the theory that blindness is nothing more than a characteristic such as blue eyes or blonde hair." He references this to the reading of an article written by a new employee upon her completion of training with Sleep Shades and a conversation with her concerning what she was told during the hiring process. Mr. Arrester corrects that notion by giving his own definition of blindness. Quotation marks, blindness is not a mere characteristic, but it is a very severe and limiting handicap, or is the proper term, disability, quotation marks. As for what I, Robert, would wish to point out, add here, is that all our staff know the good and the bad and the ugly of blindness, that though a person may start out feeling and acting as though blindness is a severe handicap, that is only the starting point. That with proper training, blindness in a person's life can be brought down to the status of a characteristic. I would hope that our commissioners, our clients, our public, would want us as commission staff to have a belief, an upbeat philosophy about the human potential to adjust to blindness and live a comfortable and productive life. And you bet we need to have new staffers come out of training thinking, feeling, and acting as that young woman did. And I can tell you this, I know she is still learning even more, expanding her belief in blind people. For Mr. Arrester's second observation, he states, quotation marks, most of us have read or have been told that the commission works with and supports all consumer organizations in order to rehabilitate the blind. However, the commission's actions speak much more loudly than its word, end of quotation. Here, Mr. Arrester refers to the text of a message sent out to staff by our business manager, in which attendance to the NFB's national convention was used as an example, as he explained how to fill out needed travel-related paperwork for reimbursement. Mr. Arrester's reaction was to write, referring to the business manager, in his mind, quotation marks, no one would be sent to the ACB convention, so his attention was directed solely toward the NFB, end of quotation. What I would like to say here is, even I do not try and read the minds of our business management staff, but it is important to know that since Dr. Van Zandt has been at the helm of the commission, all staff have been encouraged to attend meetings of all blindness-related groups. In response, I and many of our staff in large numbers attended the ACB state convention, and in smaller numbers, I know that several staff have attended the ACB national conventions, including Dr. Pearl herself. I bet it is not known by most people that new staff are required to attend both ACB and NFB state conventions. I will also say that our training opportunities are limited, and staff will try and choose the event that will best serve their need at the time. So to say how many will attend any group's event remains to be seen. As for Mr. Arrester's third observation, wherein he states, quotation, another example of the fact that the leaders of the NFB are looked upon as being the only experts in the field of blindness, end of quotation. He refers to an upcoming workshop wherein we will be bringing in a blind vendor who happens to be the president of the NFB's merchants division. I too wondered why this guy. And so I asked the director, Dr. Van Zandt, and was told we have made inquiries into both ACB and NFB groups for ideas, and this particular gentleman had the specifics needed for this workshop, partnering with private business. In conclusion, I say, we all have a tough job making this commission work for all Nebraskans. I appreciate and respect all levels of the commission team. I know that we as members of that team will at times have to say it as we see it. Thus, what I encourage all of us to do is watch what we say and write, and after the tough things are said, make sure we point out what is good and what we do as a commission.
Anyway, so okay. Thanks. I just thought I wanted to say that from my corner of this team.
No hard feelings, Robert. You have your right to speak up, and we spoke up, and you spoke up, so we'll go on from here.
But, thanks, Bill, because, we have different groups here, and we really do need to say some tough things sometimes. So, I guess on a level, too, I appreciate what you wrote. But I just wanted to put that rest out there, too.
Well, I want it known that I respect every member of the commission. They work hard. I know they work hard. And for not a great deal of money, and more power to them for their efforts on behalf of the blind of the state of Nebraska. No problem as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Madam Chairman.
Yes, Dorothy.
I have a question. You know, I know Senator clients are encouraged to go to the NFB National Convention, and the commission pays their expenses. Is that correct?
Are you asking Pearl that question?
Yeah, well, I guess.
I mean, I have.
Pearl, does the commission pay their expenses?
Okay, the counselors across the state, not just in the center.
Yeah,
Okay,
no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay. do know that they can discuss with their clients any training opportunities that, you know, fit that person's plan.
Mm-hmm.
I know that in the center, clients are told about the national conventions of both the ACB and the NFB, and you know, I certainly encourage staff to see which they can attend. If a client, whether they're in the field or the center, does decide and has concurrence with the counselor that attending either convention is going to be a benefit to them toward achieving their employment goal, it's not just, you know, and
sure,
it has to be related to their plan, then that will be part of the plan, and the commission will provide for the costs. The counselors always work with the clients to get them to share rooms or to,
sure,
you know, that sort of thing. We don't buy a first class ticket and a single room for every individual that wants to attend any convention. But to say that the center encourages clients to go to NFB and not ACB would not be correct, but yes, we do encourage and pay for costs for attending conventions.
Good.
Yes, and I think one of the things that I think everyone is encouraged to be a part of these days is informed choice, and that way, you know, if a person knows what's out there, then a person can choose. One of the things I would remind us as a commission board of is that whenever we write something or say something or do something, even if we're not doing that in the capacity as a member of the Board of Commissioners, people see us as that, because that is one of our roles that is a very public role. And so whenever we do those things, it is a good idea for us to make sure of the accuracy of what we're saying before we go out and say it. I think that that's something that it's good to be reminded of, and that we really do need to take seriously, because we're, you know, we are public servants. That's what we are.
And I agree with you, Barb, but also that should include staff people also. So,
well, my role doesn't, what I'm talking about here is us as commission board members, and you know,
I can speak to that, because you're right, Dorothy.
Yeah.
And we're very adamant with staff at all levels that we're professional and that we're providing information about resources to clients and to individuals, and you know, making the fact that we require, not just provide, but require new staff to attend at least one of both state conventions. You know, we want people to know what the resources are,
mm-hmm,
and to be equitable in their explanation of things to people.
Okay, say if we send them to the NFB National Convention, it wouldn't be fair to send them to the ACB, National Convention, and in that manner, they get to choose. which group they want to participate with.
Well, certainly we provide the opportunity to attend to those two things and all number of other kinds of national trainings and events. Should we require everybody to go to everything? No, we don't have that kind of money.
No, you don't. I know.
But we offer it to people, and those who are interested, you know, we... And also, I should mention, of those who attend national conventions, we don't necessarily pay... Well, we don't pay full costs for everybody. Mm-hmm. Again, we sometimes it's a combination of work time and sharing a room or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Michael Floyd.
Okay, I will take you, Michael. I just looked at my watch and we're now getting a little off.
Are we at the point?
No, we're not.
Madam Chairman, are we at the point for public comment?
We've been